Hello, hello, it's Silly Auntie Sissy. I'm here for you, I'm Silly Auntie Sissy. And I wanna have some fun. Merry Christmas, you can have all the ice cream and lollipops you want, cause I'm Silly Auntie Sissy. Welcome to Radio Theater with Silly Auntie Sissy. Well, guys, it's here, the 12th day of Christmas, and it's Merry, Merry Christmas. Merry, Merry Christmas. It's the 12th day of Christmas, and my true love got to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. On the third day of Christmas, my true love sent to me three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me six geese a-laying, five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the seventh day of Christmas, my true love sent to me seven swans a-swimming, six geese a-laying, five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the eighth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me eight maids a-milking, seven swans a-swimming, six geese a-laying, five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the ninth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me nine ladies milking, eight maids a-milking, seven swans a-swimming, six geese a-laying, five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the tenth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me 10 lords a-leaping, 9 ladies dancing, 8 maids a-milking, 7 swans a-swimming, 6 geese a-laying, 5 golden rings, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the 11th day of Christmas, my true love sent to me 11 pipers piping, 10 lords a-leaping, 9 ladies dancing, 8 maids a-milking, 7 swans a-swimming, 6 geese a-laying, 5 golden rings, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge on a pear tree. And because it's the 12th day of Christmas somewhere, where I am, it's only Christmas Eve. Somewhere, Santa's already been, and people are waking up in merriment. So on the 12th day of Christmas, my true love sent to me 12 drummers drumming, 11 pipers piping, 10 lords a-leaping, 9 ladies dancing, 8 maids a-milking, 7 swans a-swimming, 6 geese a-laying, 5 golden rings, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. Well, brilliant. Isn't it now? Well, thank you guys. And Merry Christmas! I was just listening to the history about St. Nicholas. And I know St. Nicholas Day was the beginning of December. But I have to say, it's an amazing thing. St. Nicholas. I mean, he's been around, he was a real person, of course. He wasn't just a saint. He was someone that people said, this is an amazing guy. He gave love to everybody. And so we celebrated his day. And then eventually what happened was, in America, in the 1900s, it became more and more commercialized. Every country had a different version. Father Christmas and Father Santa Clauser in the Dutch. Santa Claus. But in America, sort of people came on their own and became commercialized. And then they made Miracle on 34th Street. And so gradually St. Nicholas, when we celebrated this day, the Catholics gave us that. Gradually it became, by the 1900s, a guy in a red suit. So, and jolly, ho, 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 Merry Christmas. And that's what it all became. So you can thank America for that. New York, you can thank America for that. For Fun Boo. Anyway. No, that's just an Italian. No. Anyway, Merry Christmas, guys. And that's the history of St. Nicholas. It was a very good, on Fox Nation, a very good story. Look it up. So here, I'm going to read, before we get into the Secret Garden, I'm going to read The Night Before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there rose such a clatter, I sprung from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up in the slash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when to my wandering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 teeny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a minute it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all, as dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mount to the sky. So up to the housetop with coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys. And in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and prowling of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning round down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with soot and ashes. And a bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the bed on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a brown face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Ho, ho, ho! He was chumpy and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings and turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprung to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the dawn of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Amazing. And this was a classic edition by Clement C. Moore, illustrated by Charles Santor. The Night Before Christmas. Amazing. Well, there we go. Now, what are we doing now? So we're going to read two more chapters of Secret Garden, and we'll call it a night. When his head was out of sight, Colin, this is when the sun went down. When his head was out of sight, Colin turned to Mary. Go and meet him, he said, and Mary flew across the grass. Dickon was watching him with sharp eyes. I can stand, he said. I told thou could, as soon as they stopped being afraid. Yeah, I stopped. Yes, I stopped, said Colin. Then suddenly he remembered something Mary had said. Are you making magic? He said sharply. Dickon's curly mouth spread in a cheerful grin. They's doing magic thyself. It's same magic as made thee work out of the earth, and he touched with his thick boot a clump of crocuses in the grass. Colin looked down at them. Aye, there couldn't have been bigger, Maggie, than there, or couldn't be. He drew himself up straighter than ever. I'm going to walk to that tree, he said, pointing to one a few feet away from me. I'm going to be standing there when Weatherstaff comes here. I can rest against the tree, if I like. When I want to sit down, I will sit down, but not before. Bring a rug from the tree. Chair. He walked to the tree, and though Dickon led his arm, he was wonderfully steady. When he stood against the tree trunk, it was not too plain that he supported himself against it. When Ben Weatherstaff came through the door in the wall, he saw him standing there, and he heard Mary muttering, "What art thou saying?" said Ben, but she did not tell him. What she was saying was this, "You can do it, you can do it, I told you you could. You can do it, you can." She was saying it to Colin because she wanted to make magic and keep him on his feet like that. She could not bear that he should give in before Ben Weatherstaff. He did not give in. "Look at me," he commanded. "Look me all over. Am I hunchback? Have I gotten the crooked legs?" Ben Weatherstaff had not quite got over his emotion. "No, thou hasn't. What have been doing with thyself? Hiding out in sight and letting folk think you was crippled and half-witted." "Half-witted? Who thought that? Lots of fools. The world's full of jackasses. Why did they shut thyself up for? Everyone thought I was going to die." "I'm not," said Colin shortly, and he said it with such decision. "Thy die? Not of thy sort. That's got too much punk in thee. When I saw thee put the legs on the ground, I knew that was all right." There's a queer mixture of crabbled tenderness and shrewd understanding in his manner. The Rajah consoled him to sit himself on a rug under the tree. "What work do you do in the gardens, Weatherstaff?" he inquired. "Anything I'm told to do. I'm kept up by favor because she liked me." "She?" said Colin. "Thy mother." "My mother," said Colin, and he looked about quietly. This was her garden, wasn't it? Aye, it was. She was more fond of it. "It's my garden now. I'm fond of it. I shall come here every day. But it's to be kept a secret. My orders are that no one knows that we come here." Ben Weatherstaff twisted itself in a dry old smile. "I've come here before when no one saw me," he said, "and I'll keep coming." "What? When?" "The last time I was here was about 2 years ago." "But no one has been in it for 10 years, cried Colin. "There's no door." "I'm no one, and I don't come through the door. I came over the wall." She was so fond of it, she was, and she was pretty young thing. "It wouldn't have been Wick as if thou hadn't done it," said Dickon. "I did wonder." "I'm glad you did. You'll never know how, you'll know how to keep the secret." "Aye, I'll know, sir," answered Ben. On the grass near the tree, Mary had dropped her towel. "You can do it, you can do it," said Mary to herself. "I tell you, you can," she said to Colin as he stood again. Dickon's round eyes were full of eager consciousness, but he said not a word. Ben Weatherstaff looked out with interested face. "Thou said as they'd have me walking about here, same as other folks." Ben Weatherstaff's mouth fell open again. "Ay, that sounds as thou got with enough. Thou art a Yorkshire lad for sure, and thou art digging too." "Go and get it," said Colin. "I can get thee a rose in a pot if you want." "Now go and get it," said Colin again eagerly. "Quick, quick." It was done quickly enough indeed. Ben Weatherstaff went away, forgetting rheumatitis. Dickon took his spade and dug the hole deeper and wider. Mary slipped out to run and bring back a watering can. "I want to do it before the sun goes quite down," he said, Colin. Mary thought that perhaps the sun held back a few minutes longer just on purpose. "Here, lad," he's handing the plant to Colin. "Set it in the earth," said Ben. The thin white hand shook a little, and Colin flushed deeper as he sat there in the earth and held it while old Ben made firm the earth. It was filled in and pressed down. "It's planted, and the sun is early slipping over the edge. Help me up, Dickon. I want to be standing when it goes. That's part of the magic." And Dickon helped him. And the magic, or whatever it was, so gave him strength that when the sun did slip over the edge and end the strange, loving afternoon for them there, he actually stood on the 2 feet, laughing. Magic. The next chapter. Dr. Craven had been waiting some time at the house when they returned. "You should not have stayed so long. I'm not tired at all," said Colin. "Made me well. Tomorrow I'm going out in the morning as well as the afternoon." "I'm not sure that I can allow it," answered Dr. Craven. "I'm afraid it would not be wise. It would not be wise to try to stop me." Even Mary had found out that one of Colin's chief peculiarities was that he did not know in the least what a rude little brute he was, with his way of ordering people about. He had lived on a sort of desert island all of his life, and had he been the king of it, made his manners much worse. Mary had indeed been rather like himself, and since she had been Burnett Misselswink, had gradually discovered that her own manners had not been of the kind which is unusual or popular. Having made this discovery, she naturally thought it of enough interest to communicate to Colin. "What are you looking at me for?" he said. "I'm thinking that I'm rather sorry for Dr. Craven." "So am I." "He won't get Misselswade at all. I'm not going to die." "I'm sorry for him because of that, of course," said Mary, "but I was thinking that..." Just then, it must have been very hard to have to be polite for years to a boy who was always rude. "I would never have done it." "Am I rude?" said Colin. "If you had been his own boy, and he had been a slapping sort of man," said Mary, "he would have slapped you." "But he daren't," said Colin. "No, he daren't. Nobody ever dared to do anything you don't like, because you were going to die and things like that. You're such a poor thing." "But I'm not going to be a poor thing. I won't let people think of one of me. I stood on my own feet this afternoon." "It's always having your own way that makes you so queer." "Am I queer?" he demanded. "Yes," said Mary, "very. But you needn't be cross, because so am I queer, and so is Ben Weatherstaff. But I'm not as queer as I was before I began to like people, and I found the garden." "I don't want to be queer," said Colin. He was very a proud boy. He lay thinking for a while, and then Mary saw his beautiful smile again and gradually changed his whole face. "I shall stop being queer if I go every day to the garden. There is magic in there, good magic. You know, Mary, I'm sure there is." "So am I," said Mary. "Even if it isn't magic," Colin said, "we can pretend it is. Something is there, something." "It's magic," said Mary, "but not black. It's as white as snow." They've always called it magic, and indeed it seemed like it in the months that followed. At first it seemed that the green things would never cease pushing their way through the earth. Then the green things began to show buds. Ben Weatherstaff had seen it done and had himself scraped out mortar from between the bricks. And Ben kept saying she was main fond of them, she was. The seeds Dickon and Mary had planted grew as if fairies had tended them. Santee poppies of all the tints danced in the breeze by the sore, gaily defying flowers which had lived in the garden for years, in which it might be confessed, seemed rather to wonder how such new people had gotten there, and the roses, rising out of the grass, tingled around the sundial, reaching the tree trunks and handing from their branches fair fresh leaves and buds, teeny at first, but swelling and working magic until they burst and curled into cups of scent, delightfully spilling themselves over their brims and filling the garden air. Colin saw it all, watching with each change as it took place. Each morning he was brought out, and every hour of each day, when it didn't rain, he spent it in the garden. He would lie on the grass. If you watched long enough, he declared, you could see all but the buds unsheath themselves. And this was not the half of the magic. The fact that he had really once stood on his own feet had set Colin thinking tremendously. And when Mary told him of the spell, she had worked as if he was excited and approved of it greatly. Of course there must be lots of magic in the world, he said. The next morning when they went to the secret garden, he set once for Ben Weatherstaff. Ben came as quickly as he could and found the Rajah standing on his feet under a tree. Good morning, Ben Weatherstaff, he said. I want you and Dickon and Mary to stand in a row and listen to me because I'm going to tell you something very important. Aye, aye, sir, answered Ben Weatherstaff. I'm going to try a science experiment. When I grow up, I'm going to make great scientific discoveries, and I'm going to begin with this experiment. Aye, aye, said Ben. Though this was the first time he had heard of great scientific discoveries. It was the first time Mary had heard of them either. But even at this stage, she had begun to realize that queer as he was, Colin had read about a great many things and was somehow a very convincing sort of boy. The great scientific discoveries I'm going to make, he went on, will be about magic. Magic is a great thing, and scarcely anyone knows anything about it except a few people in old books, and Mary a little because she was born in India, where there are fakirs. I believe Dickon knows some magic, but perhaps he doesn't know he knows it. He charms animals and people. I would never have let him come to me if I had not seen an animal charmer, which is a boy charmer too, because a boy is an animal. I am sure there is magic in everything, only we have not sensed it. We don't have sense enough to get a hold of it and make it do things for us. That sounded so imposing that Ben Weatherstaff became quite excited and really could not keep still. Aye, aye, sir. When Mary found his garden, it looked quite dead. Then something began pushing things up out of the soil and making things out of nothing. One day, things weren't there, and another, they were. I had never watched things before, and it made me feel very curious. Scientific people are always curious. I kept saying to myself, who is it? What is it? It's something it can't be. Nothing. I don't know its name, so I call it magic. I've never seen the sun rise, but Mary and Dickon have, and from what they tell me, I'm sure that it is magic too. Sometimes something pushes it up and draws it. Something since I've been in the gardens, I've looked up through the trees at the sky, and I've had a strange feeling of being happy if something were pushing and drawing in my chest and making my heart breathe fast. Magic is always pushing and drawing and making things out of nothing. Everything is made out of magic leaves and trees, flowers and birds. The magic in this garden has made me stand up and know I'm going to live to be a man. I'm going to make the scientific experiment of trying to get some and put it in myself and make it push and draw me and make me strong. I don't know how to do it, but I think that if you keep thinking about it and calling it, perhaps it will come. Perhaps that is the first thing baby... It is the first baby way to get it. When I was trying to stand that first time, Mary kept saying to herself as fast as she could, you can do it, you can do it, and I did. I had to try myself at the same time, of course, but her magic helped me, and so did Dickens. Every morning and every night, as often in the daytime as I can remember, I'm going to say magic is in me. Magic is making me well. I am going to be as strong as Dickon, as strong as Dickon, and you must all do it too. This is my experiment. Will you help me, Ben Weatherstaff? Aye, aye, sir. Aye, aye. If you keep doing it every day as regularly as soldiers go through a drill, we will see that what will happen and find out if the experiment succeeds. You learn things by saying them over and over and thinking about them until they stay in your mind forever. And I think it will be the same with magic. If you keep calling it to come to you and help you, it will get to the part of you, and it will stay and do things. I once heard an officer in India tell my mother, said Mary, that there was Fokkers who said words over and over 1,000 times. I've heard Jen Fox's wife say the same thing over thousands of times, said Ben Weatherstaff. Colin drew his brows together and thought a few minutes, then cheered up. Well, he said, you see, something did come of it. She used the word magic until she made him beat her. If she'd used the right word, magic had something nice, perhaps. He wouldn't have gotten drunk. But Ben Weatherstaff chuckled, and there was shrewd admiration in his little old eyes. Well, next time I see Ben Weather, I'll give her a bit of hint of what magic will do for her. So magic will help everybody. Dickon had stood listening to the lecture, his round eyes shining with curious delight. Nut and Shell were on his shoulders, and he held a long-eared white rabbit in his arms. Do you think the experiment will work? Colin said, wondering what he was thinking. He so often wondered what Dickon was thinking. He smiled. Aye, that I do. It'll work the same as thou seest do when the sun shines on them. Colin was delighted, and so was Mary, fired by recollection of Fokkers and devotees and illustrations. Colin suggested they should all sit cross-legged. It'll be like sitting in a sort of temple. Eh, that might spoil the magic. They mustn't begin by saying thou aren't tired. That could really spoil the magic. Colin turned and looked at him into his innocent round eyes. That's true. I must only think of the magic. It all seemed most majestic and mysterious when they sat down in their circle. Ben Weatherstaff felt as if he had somehow been led into appearing at a prayer meeting. Ordinarily, he was fixed in being what he called being the Rajah's affair. He did not resent it, and was indeed inclined to be grateful at being called upon to assist Mistress Mary. Mistress Mary felt solemnly enraptured. Dickon held his rabbit in his arm, and perhaps he made some charmer's signal to no one heard, for when he sat down, like the rest, the crow, the fox, the squirrels, and the lambs slowly drew near and made a part of the circles, settling each into a rest as if on their own desire. The creatures have come, said Colin gravely. They want to help us. Colin looked quite beautiful, Mary thought. Now, we will begin. Shall we sway backward and forward, Mary, as if we were Devrashes? I can't do swaying backward and forward, said Ben. I've got the rheumatitis. The magic will take them away, said Colin, in a high priest tone, but we won't sway until it has done it. We will only chant. I can do no chanting. They turned me out of the church choir the one time I tried it. No one smiled. They're all much too much in earnest. Colin's face was not even crossed by a shadow. Then I will chant. The sun is shining. The sun is shining. That is the magic. The flowers are growing. The roots are stirring. That is the magic. Being alive is the magic. Being strong is the magic. The magic is in me. The magic, it is in me. It is in me. It is in me. It is in me. It's in every one of us. It's in Ben Weatherstaff back. Magic, magic, magic. Come and help. He said it great many times, not 1,000 times, but quite a goodly manner. Number. Mary listened, entranced. She felt as if it were at once queer and beautiful, and she wanted him to go on and on. Now I'm going to walk around the garden. Ben Weatherstaff's hand had just dropped forward, and he lifted it with a jerk. You're not in church, said Colin. That sermon was good enough, but I'm bound to get out there. He was not quite awake yet. You're not in church. Not me. Who said I were? I heard every bit of it. You said thou magic was in my luck. Back. The Rajah waved his hand. That was the wrong magic, he said. You will get better. You have my permission to go to your work, but come back tomorrow. I'd like to see they walk around the garden, grunted Ben. It was not an unfriendly grunt, but it was a grunt indeed. The Rajah did not object to his staying, and so the procession was formed. It really did look like a procession. Colin, who was at his head with Dickon on one side and Mary on the other, Ben Weatherstaff walked behind, the creatures trailed around them. Soot was following with similarity of a person who felt himself in charge. It was a procession which moved slowly, but with dignity. "The magic is in me," he kept saying. "I did it! The magic worked," he said. "This is my first scientific discovery." "What would Dr. Craven say?" "He won't say anything. This is the biggest secret of all. No one will know anything about it until I have grown so strong that I can walk and run like any other boy. I shall come here every day in my chair, and I shall be taken back in it. I won't have people whispering and asking questions. Then sometime when he comes back, when my father comes back, I shall walk into his study and say, 'Here I am. I'm like any other boy, Father. I'm quite well, and I shall live to be a man. It has been done by a scientific experiment.' He thinks he is in a dream. He won't believe his eyes." Colin flushed triumphantly. "He'll be obliged to believe them. One of the things I'm going to do after the magic works and before I begin to make scientific discoveries is to be an athlete. We shall have thee taken to boxing in a week or so," said Ben. Colin fixed his eyes on them sternly. "Weatherstaff, that is disrespectful. You must not take liberties because you are on the secret. However, once the magic works, I shall not be a prize fighter. I shall be a scientific discoverer." "Ah, ask pardon, sir," answered Ben. "I ought to have said it wasn't a joking matter," but his eyes twinkled, and secretly he was immensely pleased. He really did not mind being snubbed, since the snubbing meant that the lad was gaining strength and spirit. And that's it. Next chapter. Let them laugh. Well, and so it begins. Thank you, guys. Stay strong. Stay real. Merry Christmas from Chessie and to all of those who are with us. Merry, Merry Christmas. Peace to all. From Silly Auntie Sissy. Thanks for listening today, and keep the magic in your heart.